Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is episode 222. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. On this episode 222, it is the Quarantine Quad Series with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider, based in Ontario, Canada. Part 1 was posted last week on episode 221. This is a four-part series with Ryan, which we like to call Ask Ryan, because this guy is just so willing to share all the info that he has, or if not, he'll make up answers. But in all jest, his answers are pretty darn spot on, because Ryan has been working in this industry for quite a while and working on an international level consulting to wineries. And that has afforded him a really good overview of barrels, having worked with Radu, which also has offices in the U.S., and they are a barrel-making craft company. So when you're in good company, like Ryan is, you're going to be gleaning a lot of info that he is then able to pass on. And I ask listeners of Cider Chat to send in some questions, and that's what we're going to be getting to coming up. But first, I'm going to give you a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
I'm really excited to share with you a new initiative at Cider Chat Podcast, which is an opportunity. Well, you heard that little honk, and I had to stop the recording, run out, and meet my friend Jack Donahue, who had just tried his hand at keeving cider. I had a kit on how to keeve cider that I gave to him that I had mailed, ordered, and received from Cider Supply about a year or so ago. And he tried it and had a weird thing happen. So maybe if you have some thoughts on it, if you're hearing this, you might know what happened. But he said that instead of the brown chapeau, the brown cap rising up to the top, it went and floated to the bottom. And it sounds like the cider might be a little flabby, kind of not so rich and cidery. We'll see. I haven't opened it yet. But if you don't know what keeving is, it's a technique used to make cider, and this is a way to have cider be sweet at the end and finished product. And before you actually begin fermentation, you do this keeved process to take out all the nutrients out of the juice, and it creates this brown cap. And you siphon the juice out and then ferment it. And because there's so little nutrient in the juice, the yeast during primary fermentation kind of sputters out because there's no more nutrients to kind of gobble up and keep rolling along. And that's why you get that kind of sweet finish on a cider. That's kind of like a shorthand part of it. Anyways, that was cool. In the middle of my recording, a cider friend rolls in and drops off a bottle of keeve cider. Yay, can't wait. I'll share that on Sunset Cider Club night when this episode 222 goes live. I'm going to just take another little pause here, catch my breath, and then tell you about some exciting news for Cider Chat that includes you. Okay, so what I was trying to say right before the horn honked is that I am integrating a new segment into the podcast that requires audience participation. So it might be you as a listener who might be inspired to join in on this, or perhaps you know someone who enjoys writing. Because the segment is looking for essays that are up to 3,500 words, and they cover a topic that could be fiction or nonfiction surrounding the world of cider. And of course, we also include Perry.
Of course we do, Rhea.
I know Perry, of course, and Perry and Quince, it could be anything.
A Quince story would be very entertaining.
Yeah, definitely, Mr. Quince. So we're hoping that listeners will spread the word. Perhaps you know someone who enjoys writing and has always wanted to try their hand at that. Perhaps this period of time, this pause, this giant pause that we're in, will give you the opportunity to do that. There's two parts of this. So one is writing the essay, and then I really want to encourage the authors. The whole goal here is for the authors to read their own essay.
We can't wait.
I agree, Medlars. Neither can I. I think it's really cool to have authors reading their own essays. So if this is something that inspires you or someone you know might want to participate in this, then please have them contact me. Send an email to Rhea@ciderchat.com. That's spelled R-I-A. And in the subject heading, you need to put in Stories in Ciderville. All right. More coming up on this edition of Cider Chat, episode 222. All right, some more good news coming your way. The spring edition of Full Juice Magazine is now available online, and it's free. It's totally free. All you need to do is go to fulljuice.co.uk. I'll have a link in the show notes for that. A wonderful group of writers and passionate cider fans and promoters, if you will, and makers in their own right are part of this Full Juice Magazine. I mean, Susanna Forbes of Little Pomona, she's like the editor. Wonderful, wonderful person. All these people are awesome. And Cider Chat got a little mention on there on page 4. You might want to check it out. It was a little article written by James Finch, who is also known as a cider critic. And he has an online show that is promoted every Friday. It's called Fine Cider Friday. And a really nice guy. Anyways, he listed all these online resources that you could go to find out more about cider. And it's a nice list. Actually, one that I didn't know about. Number 10 is something I didn't know about. And that was kind of informative. And number 1, he listed as Cider Chat Podcast. So thank you, James. That was really sweet to make mention of the podcast. And it really means a lot to me. So a big tip of the glass to you and to all the other writers and media people who are out there working tirelessly to keep people and cider itself in the news. All right, one more piece about the UK, and that is I still have the England Cider Tour scheduled for this coming September 1st through the 6th. And it's visiting makers in Somerset and Herefordshire, attending a festival called the Ross Cider Fest, and going to the Cider Museum, also doing some sightseeing. It is a gastronomic feast of food, people, and of course, cider and sightseeing. I mean, what's not to love about that? If you want to find out more, go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com. And as I was preparing for this here, episode 222 this week, I've just been thinking a lot lately of the trips I've taken most recently. I mean, just a couple months ago, I was in France at the Cider Expo, the first ever Cider Expo held. And it was historical. It was a moment of time that I will never regret doing. I mean, it was not the most easiest for me to do. You know, I had just come off of CiderCon and went out there, and I don't want to be kind of like, wait, poor me. But sometimes it's hard. I know it's hard to kind of like make a commitment and say, you know, how am I going to afford that? How am I going to do that? But one thing I've learned during this pandemic is I'm not going to let opportunities pass me by. I mean, we just never know what's going to happen next. I mean, if you told me we'd be in this situation, any of us, we'd all be like, are you kidding me? You're crazy. You're talking about a science fiction book. Well, we are in that book right now, and it's changed my perspective on things. If I could seize the day, damn it, I'm going to seize that day, and I'm not going to look back because life is short. I mean, as quirky as that sounds, life is short. So that's why I'm offering the tour. I know people have contacted me and said, you know, Rhea, I want to go. I'm just waiting on COVID, and so am I. That's why we have a very gracious cancellation thing. So we're going to make that decision by the 1st of July and just see what the world's holding for all of us. And, you know, in the end, I just really wish you and yours the best. And if you can make the England Cider Tour, if we could do it, we're going to do it. All right. I'll be right back, and we'll be going right into Ask Ryan. All right, so now it's time for part two of the Quarantine Quad Series with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider. Now, Fieldbird Cider is located on the north shore of Lake Ontario in Prince Edward County, and there's a whole bunch of cideries in that area and also wineries, and they're quite a community of people. I had the privilege of going there with Ryan and meeting a lot of folks. There's a lot of podcast episodes in the archive you want to be checking out if you are interested in that area. It's just super nice. And I failed to put in the show notes last week on how to contact Fieldbird. I do want to make a recommendation that you follow Fieldbird Cider, their Facebook page, and also on Instagram. Ryan's just a wonderful writer. He's a very authentic person to begin with, and his writing just brings you there. It's pretty eloquent and so sincere. I just adore this guy. So last week we were taking questions from Michael. We're going to finish up with a question that he was asking about with barrels and then move on to another question that came in from Sue on how do you sanitize a barrel that's been sitting for 6 months untreated? So we have a little bit there to go in. And then next week we'll go on with part three. Again, this is a four-part series with Ryan Monkman called Ask Ryan. Is there a recommended height just for stacking barrels, you know, like an average height? It doesn't. It depends on your setup, right?
Yeah, it depends on your setup and how you like to manage them. Mm-hmm. So we at Fieldbird, and this is pretty common at most places with a large winery program, is we stack them about... I like talking to you, Rhea, because in my head, I feel like I need to convert everything into Imperial.
I could do the math right here on my computer. So you throw it out and I'll...
So we put them about 60 centimeters apart, which I think is like 2 feet. Mm-hmm. And we put them in rows that are 60 centimeters to 75 centimeters apart. And we usually go about three high, but sometimes four high. And how we access our barrels is by what we call monkey climbing. So actually using the barrel racks as a ladder. And when they're close enough like that, you have a very sturdy platform you can walk on from side to side, especially if you're tied off. And because a stack of barrels full of cider is incredibly stable, the risk of it falling over is quite small. Some people will stack them in a wall and use a ladder to access them. And the risk there is that a ladder can slip out at the bottom. So if you're using a ladder, you have to make sure you've tied it off to your barrel rack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it kind of what works for your space. My truthful answer is the lower they are, the easier they are to work with. So if you have the space to make them only one tall, do it. A winery I worked at 3-4 years ago had a huge production space. It was uncommonly lucky to have this much floor space in the cellar. And we were able to stack the barrels just one high, which meant everything was easy to access all the time just by walking. And it was like a dream. Mm. But, you know, us at Fieldbird and basically everywhere else in the world doesn't have that much floor space to work with. So
stack them
as you can fit them. If you get them close enough that you can kind of have a foot on one stack and a foot on another stack, that's what we find the safest way to manage your second and third tier.
Very good. And you're right. 60 centimeters is 2 feet. Exactly. So that's something just good for people to bear in mind. Here's last question from Michael, and it's a very common one. The concern about barrels is there any main problems when barrel aging other than cleanliness? So people thinking about trying their hand working with oak barrels, Anything else to kind of consider besides the bigger picture of how do you keep that darn barrel clean?
Yeah, headspace. Hmm. So how much air is present in the barrel at any given point? So you're going to lose volume through the wood. Depending on the humidity of the space, you're either losing alcohol or you're losing water. But that is generally a good thing because in that process, you're concentrating the flavors. So you have to top up or replenish the barrel when it starts to drop. We do that every 2 weeks. There is some really interesting research that got published about 2 years ago on headspace, and that a sealed barrel, if you're topping regularly and then topping like to the brim and sealing with a solid bung, so like just a piece of silicone as opposed to like a fermentation lock, as you lose volume, that headspace that's in there actually has a low oxygen content. So standard atmosphere is like 20% oxygen, somewhere in that ballpark. I want to say 18%, but somewhere 18 to 20%. Maybe it's 20%, and when you exhale, it's 18. I don't remember. But the headspace of a sealed barrel is about 8% oxygen. So the two best ways to manage headspace are to top it when you need to. So when you're down about, depending on the size of the barrel, but when you're down, say, 1% of its volume, refill it, or even 0.5% with a bigger barrel, and use a solid bung to do a good full seal. And that way, when you do have headspace in there, the oxygen content will be lower.
So the oxygen is only coming in from the top staves that are, where's the oxygen? Because I thought oxygen's coming in from the entire surface area of the barrel.
So this is the interesting research that's still being developed right now. Okay. Think about a cross section of a barrel stave. So one of the long pieces of barrel, we call that a stave. And that's the part that's toasted. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is more true of French oak than American oak because of the tannin. But the effect is still present in American oak, it's just diminished. So if you look at a cross section of a stave, if you were to cut one in half, you would see that you have a toasted layer, a heated layer, and then a raw layer. So the outside of the barrel is raw, the inside is toasted, and in the in-between, there's like a piece that's basically been cooked but not toasted. What was the thought, what we did think was happening with barrels is that what we call micro-oxygenation. So when you put something in barrel, you get a little bit of oxygen content, and that helps develop tannin, flavor profiles, and a bunch of things. So oxygen isn't the enemy, it's just managing oxygen is important. What we thought was happening is that as cider leaves the barrel from wherever it is, so from the bottom and from the sides, as it gets evaporated out, what we thought was happening is air was replacing it in the same spot. So from the side of the barrel, cider would leave. From the side of the barrel, air would come in. What seems to be more likely happening is that as cider is seeping out through the barrel, so through the side of the barrel, the tannin in the apple is mixing with that cooked part of the barrel that still has some like proteins and other things in it that haven't been fully cooked out. Mm-hmm. And you get this basically a wall that forms that absorbs oxygen or prevents oxygen from entering the barrel. So it appears that this is one of the reasons why the headspace of a sealed barrel is about half the oxygen content of the air around us, is because it slows oxygen getting in. So you're absolutely right, what you said earlier, which is what appears to be happening is the oxygen in the air is getting in through the top staves, which are drier because that's where the headspace is. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about, but how it applies in the cellar is if you keep a tight seal on a barrel in between top ups, you will have a lower oxygen content in there than if you used a fermentation bung. Mm. And you'll get better micro-oxygenation effects and you'll get less spoilage.
Okay, I'm going to run downstairs to my cellar right now and pull off that airlock. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, good, good. That's good info. All right. I know we're kind of getting up to like an hour here right now, but I do want to go on to this next question, at least for this segment right here, which is, and this is a really big thing for makers, and this could be like a full day workshop, but this is coming in from Sue from Valley View, and it's how to sanitize a barrel that's been sitting for 6 months untreated. So the person made cider and then, you know, this happens sometimes. We get overwhelmed and all of a sudden the barrel's just sitting there and nothing's been done. Is there a way to save that barrel or is it gone?
There are people like coopers who will re-cooper a barrel. I would suggest using that as a last resort. There's a bunch of things you can try in your cellar first. So the first thing to find out is how well does it hold water? So when a barrel sits, actually, even before that, smell it. Does it smell clean? If it smells clean, you're probably mostly okay. If it smells a little funky, then there's things we can work with on that. Once you've smelt it, fill it with water and see how well it holds. So if it's been sitting for 6 months in a dry spot, what you're going to see is when you put water into it, the water's just going to start pouring out like a sieve. If that happens, if it's a big barrel, put it in some sort of like giant vat that can catch the water. So almost like you're giving your barrel a bath. Keep filling the barrel with water in that vat and you'll rehydrate the barrel so it can start holding water again. If you're at home with the 3 gallon one, put it in your bathtub and do the same thing. So what you're trying to do is get as much water in contact with the barrel. So you rehydrate it so it can hold water again and eventually cider, but without wasting water like crazy. Mm-hmm. So what we find works best for that is basically to give our barrels a bath until they hold water. And that usually takes, you know, 2 days. Mm-hmm. Takes a decent amount of time for it to absorb in. You can also look up if the barrel isn't leaking like a sieve, it's just leaking a little bit. There's all sorts of barrel rehydration techniques online using cold water, like staying it on edge and just putting water on the heads and all that fun stuff. But the first thing to do is to get it to hold water.
And Ryan, let me stop you there. So I had the same thing with my barrel, but of course I was kind of treating it with a sulfur stick, you know, in the meantime, filled it up, yeah. It leaked like a sieve. Do you have to worry about the water that you're putting in? Can you use like a basic garden hose, or should you be worrying about different like contaminants getting then into that barrel when you're filling it with water?
The chance to worry about is chlorine.
Okay.
So if you're on a municipal system, try to find a way to dechlorinate your water. Or if it's a small barrel, buy like reverse osmosis water. Chlorine mixed with oak forms a chemical called TCA, which is also known as cork taint, and will diminish fruit flavors in your cider in the neighborhood of parts per billion. Mm-hmm. So if you have a little bit of TCA in there, think of it as a few drops in a swimming pool will like ruin the cider. So for generally when using water with barrels, try everything you can to use non-chlorinated water. If you have to use chlorinated water, try to dechlorinate it somehow. So one way to do that is to heavily aerate it before you use it. If you're using this bathtub approach, you can actually fill your bathtub for like 3 days before you even put the barrel in it, and a lot of that chlorine will evaporate. But that's the biggest contaminant that I worry about with oak is chlorine.
Okay, good tip. Very good.
And then once you get it swollen so it can hold fluid, then there's all sorts of things you can do. Like you were saying, you can burn sulfur sticks. Sulfur sticks are not going to cure anything that's wrong with the barrel, but they can help preserve it. So we use burning sulfur between fills because it helps protect the barrel from getting anything involved in it. And how it works is you burn elemental sulfur. They're called barrel discs or strips, depending on what you're getting. And you light it on fire, and then you stick it in the barrel and you seal the barrel. And it'll chew up all the oxygen in the barrel and turn it into sulfur dioxide gas. When all the oxygen's gone, the little piece of sulfur stops burning. And then you just leave it sealed. So you know that there's not a lot of oxygen left in the barrel for spoilage to happen. But once you've hydrated a barrel, if you're trying to cure it, the gold standard is using steam, but it's hard to come by. So if you have a winery nearby that has a big barrel program, they likely have something called a karcher or a gamma jet, which is a way to steam barrels to clean them. And that process, usually put it on for about 15, 20 minutes, and it can restore barrels quite well. The next best thing to do is getting a product called, in America, I think you'd probably get it through a company called Scott Labs, but it's a product called Oak Restorer, which is a type of caustic cleaner that you can mix with water and roll around in the barrel, and it can help chemically clean it that way. It's a product we don't use because we don't use those types of cleaners at Fieldbird, but it is a product that has decent results. And then if you do want to take a more natural approach to it, like a less, whether you don't have access to steam or you don't want to use something like Oak Restorer, you can do a high concentration of citric acid and sulfur. And that often can pull out, if you fill the barrel with citric acid water at like pH of 2.5-ish, 2 to 2.5, which is not as much citric acid as you think for water. So get a couple pH test strips to see if you're in the right territory. It should taste like lemon juice, basically, is kind of the territory you're looking for. And then add quite a high dose of sulfur. So somewhere in the ballpark of 300 to 500 parts per million of sulfur. It's going to be pretty stinky, so do it outside. Mm-hmm. The low pH converts the sulfur. Sulfur has different forms, like free sulfur, so the sulfur you add to your cider, or in this case into the barrel, has different forms that are heavily impacted by the pH of the solution they're in. And the lower the pH, the more reactive they are. So when you put that sulfur into something that has a pH of 2 or 2.5, like the citric acid, it's going to be really smelly. Like you really smell the sulfur coming off of it. And you can leave it like that for 2 or 3 days. And the combination of the acid as well as the sulfur can help pull unpleasant aromas out of the wood and can help decrease the population of spoilage organisms. It won't eliminate them the same way that steam would, but it can like knock back the population.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then smell it, rinse it, smell it, and then start the process again. So we've restored barrels using both steam and using the citric and sulfur approach. And citric sulfur approach we find usually takes 2 or 3 attempts, but we can usually get something pretty good out of it by the end.
What would you define as like that like aroma that you're looking for coming out of the barrel that says, okay, we're good to go?
Oh, it's the easiest thing in the world. If you smell it and it's gross, it's not ready yet. Like that's the honest answer.
Right.
You have to trust your nose. Mm-hmm. The thing you smell in the barrel is going to end up in the cider in some way. Mm-hmm. So if it smells like something you want to drink, you're probably good. If it smells like something you don't want to drink, you got more work to do. Mm-hmm. And the looking into the barrel is a good tip. We use Penlight flashlights so we can see. It's a good way to see if you have any like buildup or gunk in there. It's pretty hard just to look into a barrel because it's dark, but if you get a good pen light, you can see pretty well.
And the sulfur, when you're saying sulfur, are you saying metabisulfite?
Potassium metabisulfite.
Potassium, okay, because there's two different kinds.
So,
okay.
Yeah, there's two different kinds. There's potassium and there's sodium. We try not to use sodium because it can cause an instability in the final product. Basically it can form salt. The potassium is much more water soluble, so cleans much easier. Mm. So when you generally like winery and cidery suppliers will really only carry potassium metabisulfite called KMS. But I know that some home cider making places and home beer making places carry the sodium one. My recommendation is not to use it for any purpose. Always use potassium if you can. And potassium metabisulfite KMS is it's like 57% sulfur by weight. So generally we double it. So if you're trying just to make it easy for us, we say if we're trying to add 300 parts of sulfur, we add about 600 parts per million of KMS. Because only half of KMS is sulfur.
That ends part two of the Quarantine Quad series with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbert Cider. And I think if you're like me, you kind of are getting a sense like, wow, barrels are, they're like living beasts unto their own. And I always kind of felt that way with wood. It's the difference between having a wooden cutting board versus a plastic cutting board. I always prefer wood. And it's because it's just living, even though it's been cut down and made into something else or something in that characteristic of the wood itself that there's so much to dig into. And geez, we are digging into it. And I find it absolutely fascinating. Having my own barrel, I definitely had the experience where I had to rehydrate it. And I did not have a little bath. What I was able to do was to just fill the barrel up and it was just leaking like a sieve. And of course, I did this outside and it was really something to behold. So I'm going to put up a little video of that actual process that I did to rehydrate my barrel. I had taken the precaution of burning sulfur into the barrel while it was empty and getting it ready for the next time. On part four of the Quarantine Quad series with Ryan, we're going to be talking about film yeast, which is a problem that I have in my barrel now and what to do about it. Next week, in part three of the Quarantine Quad series, we're going to be talking about a particular style of making a wine, or in this case, working with cider, and it's called maderization. So you got to look it up if you want to kind of get ready for that. It's pretty cool. It's a particular kind of drink, and that question came in from Soon. And we'll also be talking about batonnage, too. So a lot ahead in the next two parts, part three and four of this series. And if you are digging this here podcast and finding value and getting some fun time around cider making, well, how about leaving a little tip for this here podcaster? You could go to ciderchat.com. There's a donate button or become a patron today. You could go to the Cider Chat Patreon page. It's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Well, that's a wrap for this year, episode 222 in the year 2020. Whew, that is like 22222, and it's going to be like that for quite a while because we are in the 200 region for episodes for Cider Chat, which just blows my mind. It's kind of hard for me to remember which what episode is, and I think that happened early on. But there's something about the 200s that's just it's just a little unmanageable for me to like take in. But here we are, nonetheless. So I'm going to bid you adieu until next week when we go live with 223 and Ask Ryan. In the meanwhile, this is Real Wind Caller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Cider, we like ponds, we love orchards and having fun. There is a reason,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes,
there is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason
why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!